Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name is Eliza Bavin, and I'm a senior journalist here at Financial Standard. Today's episode will be a little different, as everyone takes some time off for the festive season. So as we wrap up 2025, we've been reflecting on some of the major themes that have defined markets and financial services this year. One major theme that continued to make itself known was the rise of artificial intelligence. It was impossible to escape as companies like NVIDIA went from strength to strength, pushing up equity markets to governments around the world wondering how to properly regulate the space. One of our most listened to episodes this year was about AI, and particularly how it can be used by investors going forward. I was lucky enough to speak with Robeco Head of Next Gen Research, Mike Chen, back in July, because one thing is for sure, AI will surely continue to be a megatrend to watch in 2026. Enjoy.
This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership, and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name is Eliza Bavin, and I'm a senior journalist here at Financial Standard. Since OpenAI launched ChatGPT in 2022, the world has been looking at how artificial intelligence can be used. Some asset managers are investing in AI companies or those that enable its use, like data centers, while others are using AI to shape their investment strategies. So to talk through some of the complexities and opportunities that AI presents, I'm really pleased to welcome Robeco Head of Next Gen Research and MIT lecturer, Mike Chen. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just begin maybe with how to invest in AI. What should investors who are interested in that sector be looking for?
That's a great question. And to be honest with you, if I'm super frank, maybe I'm not fully equipped to answer that because I'm a quant, right? So quants, you know, we know our models, but we don't particularly know our stocks. But generally speaking, you know, you want to look for enabling technology, right? And something that cannot be commoditized. So first of all, enabling technology, obviously the GPU, right? The GPU makers such as NVIDIA and the companies that make these chips, GPU, so TSMC, that's obvious, right? And you kind of see that during the first internet revolution, right? First you have the switches and relay makers, you know, Cisco systems, et cetera, right? That laid the groundwork for the internet revolution. Then they were the ones who, the hardware ones who, they were the first one to benefit. And then you have the application people, right? So right now that obviously is, it's sort of an open race at the moment. You have, you know, a lot of companies, some public, some private, they're all doing various AI, you know, software, right? Or AI algorithms, you know, so you have the Googles, the Microsofts, the OpenAIs, you know, Anthropic, you know, you name it. It's kind of not super clear which one will emerge as dominant. It seems like, you know, the large platforms, Microsoft, Google, and Meta have a sort of an inherent advantage in that they can just integrate AI into their various applications. But again, it is, to me at least, it doesn't seem to be a clear winner yet. I don't think there's actually a set business model, to be honest, in this sort of application of AI. Is AI for a subscription model like what OpenAI has done, or is it you just integrate AI into your other services by making them more effective and more profitable, like what, you know, like Meta and Alphabet, right, have been doing for their advertising, or maybe use AI to, you know, help do drug discovery, right, for pharmaceuticals. So I think that part is still not very clear at the moment. But right now, certainly in the build-up phase, and we are still in the build-up phase, right? Just to be very clear, this AI boom is at the very beginning. And, you know, certainly the hardware makers and the hyperscalers, the data center providers, and, you know, these are benefiting from the hardware aspect of it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there is, as you kind of mentioned, a lot of buzz. Yeah. And we are in kind of the infancy of this mm-hmm. revolution. You know, you only have to look at something like when DeepSeek hit the market to go, wow, this can be a really volatile sector still. Yep. I'm wondering what lies beyond the known path. I mean, you kind of mentioned some things there in terms of like pharmaceutical companies using AI, you know, for medical research. And is that the kind of thing that you guys are looking at? What's maybe outside of the realm from your perspective that maybe some other people aren't thinking about yet?
First of all, AI has been happening for quite a while, actually, right? In fact, it is first theorized pretty soon after the end of World War II by a British mathematician named Alan Turing. He's one of the founding fathers of AI. And, you know, another mathematician / computer scientist won Nobel Prize, I think it was a couple years ago, because of the work he did in one key component of AI technology, or, you know, machine learning. It used to be called machine learning, now it's called AI. Machine learning training, backward propagation, guy named Jeffrey Hinton, a professor up in Canada. So it's been going on for a while, right? And I think what's really happening, what's interesting is that previously these AIs are kind of narrow AI, in that you train these algorithms for a very specific task. Nowadays, what we have are called foundation models, right? Think about your ChatGPTs and your various other similar algorithms that they're trained, first of all, on unreal size of data, right? Just basically the entire internet and more. And once the model is trained, it's rather general purpose, right? It can help you write a sonnet for your wife or your girlfriend. It can help, or your partner. It can help you plan vacation. It can help you write codes. It can help you summarize. So this is kind of the state of the AI at the moment, for the most part. There's a new concept emerge, and that kind of addresses a few shortcomings of the current state of the art of foundation model. You know, as powerful as it is, there are still certain limitations. First is that they're not autonomous; they're basically prompt based. You have to prompt it before it can do something. And second thing is that it can only respond in sort of give you textual or, you know, graphic output, right? Beyond that, it cannot really interact with the physical or the digital world. Now, if you endow a foundation model, such as a GPT or a Anthropic system or Llama, with autonomy, and if you also give it ability to interact with either the digital and or the physical world, all of a sudden you have a thing called agents, which not only can answer questions, but can take actions and do things for you in the digital world or the physical world. For example, you know, if it you can have, you know, if you're operating like in the financial industry, such as ourselves, right? You can have agents that can monitor the market for you and perhaps take portfolio actions on your behalf, up to the autonomy you allow it to. Right. So I think that's actually a very, very exciting new world that we're kind of coming to explore and trying to understand the implication of.
Well, I mean, that's a perfect segue, because I was just about to ask you about using AI to invest and what you guys have been seeing in terms of how asset managers are using this technology to kind of shape or supercharge in some situations, yeah, their investment strategies, because this is making, I think, a lot of waves for a lot of big asset managers.
100%. And I would think that if every asset manager, if not already doing it for quite a while, like us, at least are beginning to do it or very actively planning to do it in the very near future, because I just don't see how you can kind of ignore this as a direction to go towards, right? So for us, you know, the way we use AI, again, used to be called machine learning, ML, and now it's called AI, but we've been using this set of technology for quite a while, for almost a decade. And previously it's very narrow model, right? We train it to do specific things, such as, for example, teasing out complicated dynamics in the marketplace, right? Humans are, the way our brains are wired, generally speaking, we're very good at detecting linear relationships, but obviously the real world is more complicated than just having linear relationships, right? Sometimes things are, you know, polynomial or exponential, et cetera. And one of the beauty of machine learning, again, now called AI, is that it can detect these more subtle patterns. Another, you know, really powerful technique in AI is this specific class of algorithms called natural language processing, NLP. As you know, financial information is not just numerical. A lot of financial information is either verbal or textual. In fact, a lot of the timely financial information, right, are verbal or textual. You know, how do you get these timely information? Either through breaking news or somebody tweets something or somebody writes something on social media, or there's an announcement by the Fed, right? If you want to wait for the actual number to show through, you know, either from balance sheets or income statement, it's pretty dated already. You know, and I obviously am being, you know, having the latest information and use that to invest is an advantage. So in order to do that, natural language processing or NLP is really quite an important technology to master. And we have been using natural language processing for quite a while as well. That's kind of the more classic AI. As mentioned a few minutes ago, now we're kind of into this world of foundation models, right, where you have general purpose algorithms that can do many, many things. And we're exploring how to use those to help us invest better, but not just invest better, help actually make our operations more efficient across our entire company's various function and domains. So for example, in sales and marketing, right, maybe you can have some initial idea, but then have a generative model to help you, you know, basically fill out a copy, right, for a marketing campaign, or, you know, for analysts on the fundamental side where they read a lot of reports and news articles, you know, they can actually have generative models help them summarize and actually just give them the important points of something so that they don't have to read through, you know, 20 pages of report rather than just read, you know, the executive summary. So these various aspects of generative model use has been, you know, pretty widespread across a variety of functions at Robeco.
I also wanted to ask about, you know, I think we hear a lot about it in the news when, you know, this AI had this hallucination or it's done this.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think that would be a concern for people. And especially when you've got, you know, as you touched on, the finance world is really data heavy. And there's a lot of information to be taking in. How do you protect against making sure that the information that you are getting from these machine learning models are actually
accurate? Great question. So let me say that ultimately, it is the human that are responsible for the results, right? So in fact, there is this thing called fiduciary responsibility. So, you know, basically, if something goes wrong, the organization, obviously, and then the people that makes up the organization needs to be responsible for it. You cannot blame an algorithm. That doesn't fly, right? So how do you basically work then in this world of, you have fiduciary responsibility on the one hand, but you also want to use these AIs, which tends to hallucinate on the other hand, right? So what we have settled on is what we call the man plus machine model rather than man or machine. So we're basically letting these algorithms do a lot of the intermediate parts, perhaps the more mechanical and the more, you know, lower level parts, right? But everything that goes through still needs to be checked by humans. I'll give you an example. We have a product that we launched recently called Dynamic Theme Machine. And it is a quantitative version of thematic investing. And one of the primary reason why we build such thing is that machines can literally scour all published communication, right? News articles, financial analyst reports, company communication, et cetera, to see if there's any trends emerging and pick it up, right? And picking up trends, especially emerging trends early, is super important for thematic investment because, you know, you want to be early rather than late, right? Because you could imagine once you get into a theme a bit too late, you might have a chance of basically holding the bag when the theme kind of cools off or when it blows up. So you want to get in early. So having machines is really helpful in basically scouring all of the communication and identify themes that are forming and emerging. On the other hand, you do have this hallucination problem. So not every single theme that it picks up are actually correct or what a normal experienced human investor be considered themes. So what we do is we actually have, first of all, the machines, right, identify emerging themes or possible emerging themes. But then that list of emerging themes It's actually vetted by experienced investors. So then we actually can go, they will go through each one, one by one to say, okay, theme one is a valid theme, theme two is a valid theme, but not theme three and not theme five. And they would do, they would basically do a process elimination and, you know, only leave with the ones that they consider valid themes. Now, this is actually easier than the counter problem though, right? This is identifying false positives. The counter problem is identifying false negatives, which means I'll give you an empty sheet, right? Say, now tell me what theme should be on there. That's much harder, right? So you see, right, what we're trying to do is we're trying to take what machines are really good at, which is, you know, never being tired, never complains, and you basically can read thousands and thousands and millions of articles almost instantaneously. And what humans are good at, which is judgment ultimately, right? We're trying to marry the strength of each. So it's not one or the other, but it's basically man plus machine, A plus B. And this is because ultimately we have to be responsible for the decisions that we employ, right? Whether these decisions are coming from human derived, or they're from algorithmically derived. So you always want to have that safety check, that human in the loop concept, so that you can prevent. I would say obviously we'd like to eliminate, but at least minimize to the extent possible these chances of hallucination or otherwise identifiable errors.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about what you mentioned before in terms of, well, you know, you'll be able to get these machines to make changes to your portfolio in real time under the, you know, the limits that you've set for it. Uh-huh. But then, you know, you kind of worry, well, what if it does something
that I don't want it to do? Yeah, so a couple of things, right? So maybe if, you know, so say you want, okay, let's do a thought experiment, right? So suppose this is 2035 now, 10 years from now, and you have these actual agents, right, deployed into your system and they're making investment decisions for you. First of all, you probably don't want them to make huge amount of investment decisions, right? For example, only under a certain percentage of your portfolio. So you say under 1%. Right, you can make autonomous decisions, and you after which you need to generate a report for me. That's number one. You want to set limits on it, the dollar amount. You probably also want to limit the type of decision it makes, right? If these are scenarios that humans have seen before many, many times, and thereby also machines are, you know, really aware of these cases, you say, okay, under these, if these scenarios happen, you can make autonomous decisions for up to this numerical amount. If it's a new scenario, or if the market has dramatically changed, that autonomy goes off. Then basically you have to have humans step in, right? I think that's one way to prevent these hallucinations. Again, it's all about trust, and this is actually super important when you work with AI, right? And this is actually something that I personally believe, you know, investors such as ourselves and others will have to really calibrate. And it really depends case by case basis, because too much trust gives you into trouble, because you have these hallucinations and other errors that you might not be able to capture. Too little trust, then these algorithms become useless, right? So trust needs to be extremely well calibrated. And I would see this is actually what primary issue in this, you know, envision man plus machine world. And again, I think the amount of trust also depends on specific functions and specific algos and et cetera. So, but it definitely needs to be, there's a lot of variety. So there's a wide range, but it definitely needs to be well considered and well calibrated.
So it's kind of a fine line currently for investors to toe.
Absolutely.
I'm also interested in just hearing about maybe some of the latest findings that you guys in Next Gen Research have found and what you've implemented at Robeco, because I know that you guys, obviously it's in the name, you know, look into this space a lot. Is there anything that you've been working on currently or that you've kind of implemented recently? I'm hoping you might be able to share with us some of those findings.
Yeah, so I mean, I think generally speaking, right, Next Gen Research at Robeco is sort of a natural evolution of our quant research, which, by the way, we have a 30-year history of. And Next Gen came about because there's just much more data that's out there now and many more algorithms that we can employ than, say, even 20 years, 10 years ago, right? And And this availability of data and sophisticated algorithm kind of really expanded our quant researchers' capabilities. But what hasn't changed is that we're all, you know, using data, using algorithm is not an end goal itself. The end goal is still, you know, basically trying to answer relevant investment questions, right? So I'll give you an example. A very relevant and important investment question is, do you believe company management is trustworthy, right? It, again, doesn't take a genius to even if you're not, you know, very well versed in finance, you know that it's an important question to ask. Now, previously, you know, this question is something that fundamental investors have been able to make a judgment call on, I guess, since the beginning of fundamental investing, right? How they do it? Personally, I don't know because I'm not a fundamental investor, but, you know, but I would imagine a fundamental investor say, okay, I trust that CEO's communication or no, I think that CEO is trying to hide something, right? So we couldn't do it historically because we had only, you know, financial statement information, right? From balance sheets or income statements and, you know, and relatively crude analytical techniques by modern day standards. And so we can't say, okay, is this company's executive trustworthy or not? But nowadays, obviously, with, again, natural language processing, there are many, many things we can do. For example, we could analyze the words that company executives say. Do they tend to use more third-person words? Or they use more first-person words? And that actually matters, right? You know, because psychologically, if you use more first-person words, you tend to own the result a bit more. And if you're third-person, you try to disassociate with it, right? The words that they use, tend to have more concrete meanings? The meanings could actually be in many, many contexts, right? So, you know, basically the concreteness of the words that they use. And even beyond words, actually, we now have capability to analyze person's audio signatures. So whether a person sounds confident or positive about the future, or if a person is somewhat evasive or sounds, you know, perhaps not very excited about the future, all that characteristic can actually be analyzed analytically. Obviously, again, this is a statistical game that we play and we don't claim 100% accuracy. But, you know, for the most part, you know, over a large enough sample and over a long enough time horizon, you know, we do believe we have an edge with these new tools that we, you know, that previously wasn't available. So I think this is what, you know, next gen investment is really about. And, you know, it's about, again, it's still about answering relevant investment questions, but just now with, you know, this ocean of data that exists out there and, you know, all these new cool algorithms, we're just much more capable and well-equipped to do so than before.
Wow, so we could be getting AI to psychoanalyze every
To be honest with you, it's actually been happening for quite a while, right? And for those who does this, you probably know there's these dictionaries. One of the very famous ones is called Lauren McDonald Dictionary. It's, you know, Lauren and McDonald are two researchers who published this dictionary, and they basically came out with a list of positive words and negative words in financially, right? So profit is positive, loss is negative, bankruptcy is negative, you know, I guess recapitalization would be considered positive, right? So we, you know, historically, right, like 10, 15 years ago, quants used to very naively by modern day standards look for these actual occurrence of these words. But obviously, company executives and their, you know, investor relationship department, they're pretty smart too. So they tend to, what happened was that they tend to insert these words more into company management speeches, right? So over time, you see that, you know, this thing actually starting to not work as well, because now every company management actually tends to incorporate more positive words and try to avoid the negative words. So it's a bit of a constant game of cat and mice. And, you know, us quants, you know, develop new techniques to psychoanalyze company executives, and company executives knows that they're being watched, so they tend to incorporate, they tend to incorporate more the positive element of what we watch for and try to eliminate the negative element of what we watch for also. So it's an ever-evolving game, and I think that's, you know, also makes it interesting.
I mean, absolutely. I can't wait to see, you know, what's to come in the future, especially if someone should have told the CEO at the Coldplay concert all this.
think that's going to avoid some trouble. But well, look, Mike Chen, that's all the time that we have for today. But thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eliza, for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.